Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
It was actually my boss, who's an ENT doctor, that sat me down one day and he was like, you know, Yoon, I think you would be a great physician, but have you ever thought about pursuing the culinary field professionally? He was like, I really want you to go home and ask yourself, like, what makes you happy? What drives you?
Welcome back to Working. I'm your host, Isaac Butler.
And I'm your other host, Karen Hahn.
Karen, how are things out there in lovely Los Angeles?
Good. I love winter, or like I guess quote unquote winter in LA, because it feels like fall on the East Coast. Like mornings and evenings are really nice. I still don't like love going out in the middle of the day, but that's because I'm like a little worm. I hate being in the sun.
Would you say they call you Dr. Worm?
I'm not a real doctor, but I am a real worm.
Amazing. And speaking of doctors, whose voice was that we heard? I'm the Segway King. Whose voice was that we heard at the top of the show?
So that was Yoon Sung, who is currently the pastry chef for Hanchik, as well as a practicing physician.
Not to, you know, sound like a yenta, but he's a doctor and a chef. That's wild. Can't wait to hear about that. But in the meantime, gotta know, do our Slate Plus members get a little something extra this week?
Oh, you know they do. So this week, the Slate Plus Extra bit is I talked to Yoon about his experience starting his culinary journey in Baltimore and how, like, what was available to him at that time informed his path as a chef and how he really became interested in this field, like, while starting out in medical school.
That sounds amazing. And our Slate Plus members, you'll have that little bit waiting for you at the end of this week's episode. And if you would like that little bit to be waiting for you at the end of this week's episode, not to mention, I don't know, full access behind the paywall, extra bonus episodes of Slow Burn and Big Mood, Little Mood, feeling secure and maybe a little bit smug in the knowledge that you have helped us do what we do right here at Working, why don't you sign up for Slate Plus today? Go to slate.com/workingplus. Thank you in advance. All right, now let's listen in to Karen Hahn's conversation with chef and doctor Yoon Sung.
Hello, Yoon. Thank you so much for coming on to Working.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited to talk with you because I was lucky enough to attend a pop-up event that you did with the restaurant Hanchik a few months ago. And I was really stunned to learn that in addition to being a chef, you're also working as a doctor or physician. And I believe now you're also working as the pastry chef for the Hanchik folks. And I wanted to start by asking, I think the question that everyone will have as soon as they hear that you're juggling two jobs. How do you currently balance your time for both things?
Yeah, so right now I'm working part-time in urgent care. So shifts are usually about 10 and a half to 12 hours, which can be a little bit long.
Yeah.
So right now I'm able to kind of pick up shifts whenever I want. So I'm doing urgent care shifts a couple times a week. And then right now with the Hanchik team, we're actually also in a transition period where they're not doing dine-in right now at the current brick and mortar. They're looking for a new building. And so we're doing this really exciting thing where we're doing pop-ups like, you know, several times a month. So, I think my typical week involves, you know, working at urgent care a couple times a week and then the rest of the week sort of menu planning and recipe testing and then meeting up with Justin and trying things out and then doing the pop-up. So sort of, you know, half and half right now.
Mm-hmm. That's incredible. And now to backtrack a little bit, so you have these two sort of pursuits. Was there one that came first or were they always both fields that you were interested in?
I think, you know, my parents are kind of in the healthcare field. So I grew up with, you know, the typical conservative Asian parents who are like, you must be a doctor.
Yeah.
And, you know, I grew up, I went to college, I was pre-med, and I was a pretty, I guess, stubborn teenager, like very much about like, I need to do what makes you happy, like from the get-go. And I think it's paid off. But back then, you know, it was kind of rocky with my parents. But first week of orientation, I was an undecided major and I was looking at different majors and discovered public health, which, you know, was a really amazing concept of kind of like thinking about like socioeconomic factors and how, you know, we should serve like the underserved communities, whether that's local or global. So that really appealed to me. So I was like, okay, if I have to choose health, I think this is the right route I want to pursue, because at that time, international studies was the other major I was considering. So in a way, I was kind of like, okay, if I have to appease my parents, this is the major and the route that I want to go to. And cooking, I think even in college, I was kind of always the one amongst my friends to really be interested in cooking and trying new restaurants. But, you know, back then it was more of a hobby. And then I think as, you know, I finished college and had more time to cook for myself is when I really discovered, I think this is actually more than just a hobby for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how it started.
I'm surprised to hear you say that the medical track was something that you did to appease your parents, partially because now I feel like a lot of the people that I've talked to in creative fields or even on this show, the concept of a day job is something that comes up a lot, where it's like a job that you have that you're not necessarily passionate about, but will keep the lights on for long enough for you to be able to kind of grow and develop your creative process. But on the other hand, you still want to do this. It's not that you want to give one up for the other. It's both of them are passions for you. At what point did, I guess, that particular track become something that wasn't just about making sure your parents were happy, but something that you personally were passionate about?
Sure. In college, so, you know, being a public health major, I started working at volunteering at a free clinic in inner city Baltimore. And it was just amazing to see. That's when I really discovered, you know, primary care and family medicine, where it's about building this like long-term relationship with patients. So that's why when I was, you know, in medical school and residency, I decided I wanted to do family medicine, which, you know, you see patients of all ages. And to me, I was like, if I want to really serve underserved communities and even be involved in global health, that is what makes me the most skilled in kind of all aspects. So that's kind of what I think those experiences in college sort of made me passionate about primary care. And then in medical school, you go through different rotations, and family medicine isn't the most prestigious field, I would say, especially in Asia. Like my parents were like, why don't you do plastic surgery or dermatology, something higher paying. But to me, I went through other rotations and I really did enjoy all of them, but I was like, family medicine is where my passion is, and it is about the underserved communities. And through that, I was able to also combine, you know, the culinary side by doing cooking demos in residency and making recipes for patients that are affordable but healthy.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
Do you remember any of the recipes that you developed that you were talking about?
Yeah. I think the challenge is, you know, I've lived in kind of inner city Baltimore before, and where there weren't really fresh grocery stores near me. And so, you know, if you have a dollar, it's, you know, and you have to provide for a family, like who wouldn't want to just pick up a bag of chips, which offers more calories and in a way can be more filling than buying an apple, for instance. So for me, I was really passionate about developing recipes that are, you know, healthy, but also easy to make and cost effective. So I think oats are a really great source of, you know, protein and carbs that are healthy and fiber. So kind of doing like a savory take on oats so that patients are more willing to try them. So instead of like, you know, cinnamon, sugar, kind of like the typical oats, doing like sort of like a vegetable, cheddar, butternut squash kind of oats, just using canned vegetables, and patients really enjoyed that.
Yeah. Has there been much other crossover between the two? Because I feel like if someone told me, like, find the intersection of the Venn diagram between healthcare and cooking, I wouldn't be entirely sure where to start.
Yeah, and a lot of people ask me that. Lot of people are like, what do medicine and, like, you know, culinary have in common? Like, how are you going to try to do both? But to me, actually, they actually have a lot in common. I think, you know, for centuries, I feel that food has been the medicine, you know, that have sustained our ancestors for centuries. And I think further to go into deeper, I think at their core, they're both, you know, industries of hospitality and service. So I think it's really about the patient in front of you, the guests in front of you, and kind of being able to be of service to them. So both fields have been very gratifying to me in that sense.
I love what you were saying about hospitality sort of being the cross section between these two fields that you're pursuing. And I'm curious, like, what else you think of as an overlap? Like, for instance, I would say they're both fairly scientific fields. Like, cooking, I think, more often is described as an art, but there still is a certain amount of science to it, like how much of each ingredient's going in, how long it goes in the oven, etc. Are there any other ways in which you feel like these two fields meld in your head, or is there anything else that you think, like, really overlaps and ties these two fields together?
And I love what you said about both fields kind of having, you know, science, but also art as well, because I feel like, you know, when I kind of pursued the two fields over the last decade, there has been a lot of kind of, you know, rolling with the punches, and you kind of have to improvise in a way. So a lot of people think in medicine, it's like a black and white answer where there's one diagnosis and then one cure, but that is simply not true. I think especially in a hospital setting when, let's say, like, you know, your kidneys are shutting down, but so is your heart and your lungs, it's like, which is kind of like the one that's gonna, if we focus on, kind of help, or should we try to balance all three? So there is an art to medicine as well. And I think also in terms of, like, how you convey that to the patient and their families when they're in this really vulnerable time. And I think similarly in cooking, where we think we should follow this recipe to a T, but I think depending on kind of like how the ingredient tastes at that time or the oven's temperature, there is kind of like an improvisation or art, like even when you're plating, like, maybe I'll do it a little bit differently today. So I think there's a lot of really similarities between the two.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the way that you, I guess, experiment is not quite the right word, but experiment with Korean cuisine as well, because that was one of the things that really struck me as remarkable about the menu that you developed for the pop-up with Hanshik. I wanted to ask a little bit about what kinds of things you personally like to cook and what sort of things you think about while developing recipes.
Yeah, you know, I feel like these days, thankfully, a lot of people know about Korean barbecue, kimchi, and things like that, but I believe that Korean food is so much richer and so much deeper than that. So my kind of challenge to myself and my type of cuisine is, I guess, how can I make more traditional ingredients more approachable and appealing to the average American? So things like doenjang or soybean paste that, you know, a lot of people are familiar with miso, but doenjang is a little bit funkier and more assertive in taste. Or like perilla, which is similar to shiso. And so how can I take those ingredients and really, you know, make them more contemporary? And so for the pop-up, perilla is one of my favorite ingredients. So I was like, let's do an ice cream with that. And I, you know, paired it with a brown butter cake. And, you know, perilla is in the mint and basil family. So I was like, I think strawberry can be kind of like a bridge to tie like the cake and the ice cream together. So sort of like that, I try to think about flavors that would go together in a traditional sense and try to put a Korean spin on it.
What was your personal journey with Korean cuisine as well? Did you grow up eating a lot of it, or was it something that you kind of discovered more as you were growing up? Or
So my mom is actually a really great cook, but she never really taught me any cooking because I think she has a traditional sense of, like, you know, men shouldn't cook kind of thing. So even though when I was younger, I would want to, like, I would always peer over her shoulder, be like, oh, what are you making? How do you make this? She would always, like, be like, oh, just go play with your toys. but so I think that's when I really discovered, like, good Korean food and good Korean flavors growing up. And the restaurant I worked at before was more of a farm-to-table new American restaurant. So we would have some Asian dishes, but not too much Korean food. But you know, that's when I kind of learned techniques and, you know, being farm to table, like incorporating more fresh vegetables. And but at home, I would always usually cook Korean food or kind of Korean fusion, quote unquote, dishes. And that's sort of how I developed my style, I guess, of a lot of Asian food. I think sometimes can be heavy, especially fusion, but I like to kind of balance it out.
We'll be back with more of Karen's conversation with chef and physician Yoon Sung after this. Hey listeners, Isaac Butler here. I want to ask you for two things really, really quick. The first is, if you do not subscribe to this show already and you're enjoying what you're hearing, please go ahead and hit subscribe. And if there's some way in your podcast app to rate us, to like us, to recommend us to other people, to star us, whatever it is, why don't you go ahead and do that? Also, you know what? We really love listener emails. We really love listener voicemails. We would really love to hear from you. If there's a particular creative struggle you'd like to hear us tackle, let us know. If there's a recent success or triumph you've had that you want to share with us and our listeners, let us know. If there's a guest or kind of guest you'd like to have, let us know at working@slate.com, or even better, call us and leave a listener voicemail at 304-933-WORK. Okay, now back to Karen's conversation with Yoon Sung.
As you've sort of kept balancing these two different career paths, I'm curious if there was ever a point where you thought you might have to choose one or the other, and if there was, how you decided that you could keep going with both.
Yeah, so it's interesting, actually, because so I moved to LA just about 6 months ago, and I moved to LA from the Bay Area to open a restaurant. I did a Kickstarter this past year. Thankfully, I was able to hit the goal. But in my mind, I was kind of like, if I open the restaurant, I'm going to have to leave medicine for the first at least year or two while I'm the one being in the kitchen full time. And, you know, I was like, I should start by doing pop-ups. And in the meantime, you know, I was lucky to be able to find this part-time urgent care position. And then now, as of a couple of weeks ago, the model has changed where I had this fixed goal, but then I met this really great group of people at Hanshik and in hospitality group that, you know, have been really supportive of me. Like even my first pop-up, I did it with them, and they were like, you know, when we were starting out, we had so many people who really helped us out, and so we want to be able to uplift others in the industry, and we want to help you as well. And it went really well, and so this opportunity came where we both mutually really liked working with each other, and they kind of have a similar philosophy on Korean food. So I mean, it was so different from the goal that I imagined before, but I was like, is it crazy to actually just join this team who is clearly very talented, passionate, and hardworking? And so I think, you know, I think everything happens for a reason. And so this opportunity came. And so now I'm having this hybrid model where they're willing to work with me, both the healthcare side and culinary side, to support my goals and passions. So who's to say what's going to happen down the road? And there may be a point where I may have to at least temporarily go 100% one field or the other. But I would like to keep up with both, if that means being super part-time in one of them.
And I wanted to ask about your ambition to open a restaurant as well. Can you tell me a little bit about when you started thinking about opening up your own place and coming to the central philosophy that you wanted to have behind your restaurant?
You know, I think it's everyone in the field and every chef's dream to have their own concept and have their own dream, you know. Actually, I guess I should mention the reason I was able to have the courage to even enter the field is because, you know, when I started cooking, I was doing clinical research, and I would bring stuff into the office for people to try out. And it was actually my boss, who's an ENT doctor, that sat me down one day, and he was like, you know, Yoon, I think you would be a great physician, but have you ever thought about pursuing the culinary field professionally? He's eaten at a lot of restaurants, and he was like, you know, I was always on this path since high school with horse blinders on. I was always pre-med. And second year of residency, I realized this is not what I want to do with my life, but it was too late. So he was like, I really want you to go home and ask yourself, like, what makes you happy? What drives you? And yeah. And so I really owe him a lot. I think if he hadn't challenged me, I never would have really dug into that part of me to ask myself those challenging questions. Mm-hmm. So then I was applying to medical school and I applied for a job at my favorite restaurant, Woodbury Kitchen in Baltimore. And the chef emailed me back and he sat me down for an interview and he was like, I know you don't have formal training, but I've seen your work and you seem like you have a lot of talent and passion. So we'll have you come in for a skills assessment interview. So it was an open kitchen, worked Friday night, Saturday night, the busiest nights. At the end of the second shift, the chef called all the cooks to the bar. He poured everyone a shot of bourbon and he was like, Yoon, you're hired. So that's, it was one of the happiest days of my life. And so working at Woodbury Kitchen is when I started to, like I said, like learn more about the power of, you know, really fresh seasonal local vegetables. And when you have quality ingredients, you really don't need to do much. The ingredients speak for themselves. But, you know, long story short, then I worked there and then I went on to med school interviews and decided I am going to try to pursue both. So I guess I've been, after I left the kitchen professionally, I've still been working on my style and still, despite the rigors of medical school and residency, like working on my style and my, you know, like my cuisine, like what really defines me and what makes me happy. And so that's how I developed my style over time. And I realized that similarly, like of when I first delved into the industry, obviously in this day and age, it's such a risk to open up a place of your own financially and also professionally. And so a lot of people were like, you know, you've been in school for 12 years. Now you can finally reap the benefits of being a doctor. Why would you go back to the hospitality industry and do this to yourself? And it is true, right? But I think for me, again, like life is short. And I think I've always been to be the one, like, I don't want to have regrets or ask what if. So despite how daunting it was, I was like, I'm going to do this Kickstarter. I'm going to try to open my restaurants. And I think that really spoke to people, like that I was very earnest and honest about, you know, and being vulnerable. And that's kind of what led me to be like, open up my own place, because I'm like, this is what makes me happy and I don't want to live with regrets.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you worked in pastry at Woodbury, and also, again, you are now the pastry chef for Handshake. How did you come to pursue that particular culinary field? Because it is a little bit different, or it's a slightly separate field from like general cooking, I would say.
Yeah, at Woodbury, I was able to kind of work on both the savory and the pastry side, which again was kind of unique to my position, which I really thank the chef for that flexibility. But, you know, right now for Handshake, Justin is, you know, the head chef. And so, and they already have a sous chef. So for me, naturally, like this was when we were brainstorming about like how to kind of increase the audience for Handshake. And I was like, well, I do have background in pastry. And so I think I have a lot of ideas on how we can do kind of like Korean inspired desserts. So that's what I would bring to the table. And they were like, yeah, we're thinking about doing pop-ups where, so then you and Justin as a duo can do all these pop-ups. So naturally it was kind of like a position where I thought I could contribute to and they were looking for. And, you know, I think a lot of people in culinary kind of delineate like pastry versus savory, like one or the other, but I wanted to be able to keep up with and do both if I were to open up my own place. But there are different skill sets. One thing I do love about pastry though is that I think there's something magical about, I think a lot of savory dishes, you can kind of see the ingredients and a lot of times it translates to the dish in front of you. But for pastry, it's like you have butter, eggs, flour, milk, and out of that you create something totally new and unexpected. And to me, that is just amazing. And so I've always been fascinated with the pastry world.
So ultimately, it seems like you would want to be able to have your restaurant while also continuing practicing as a physician. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that's the ultimate goal. But, you know, I'm always open to new opportunities and change. And, you know, that's what I've learned over the years. So I don't really know where this current model is going to lead, but, you know, the Hanshik team and I have talked about, like, you know, I mean, just theoretical, but maybe you can open your restaurant, like, under our hospitality group in the future, things like that. And I don't really know, you know, what's going to happen, but I'm keeping an open mind.
That said, if you suddenly came across a genie's lamp and it said, I will grant you your ideal career model right now, what would you say that looks like? Or do you not have a clear idea of that?
I think I would like to, again, this has changed, right? Where I was like, oh, maybe medicine will be more of a, you know, kind of like on the side, like couple times a month thing. But I am realizing, like, in an ideal world, I would love to be able to do both. So yeah, I think being both either a restaurant, like owner, chef, and being a physician would be amazing. And like, I think basically, like, it would be amazing if I could have some work-life balance, where if I can eventually build a team that I can be a little bit more out of the kitchen and have a team that's running and just kind of check in, that would be amazing to be able to kind of keep up with both. Because I think I'm so used to, like, hustling and grinding, and I definitely am still willing to do that. And I do think both fields do require hard work. But I do think eventually at some point I would like to be able to enjoy a little bit and take a breather. So,
of course. So you mentioned that you didn't have any formal training in cooking, like, before you plunged into the culinary world, whereas I guess with your practice as a physician, like, you went through all the expected steps, like, went to school, went to pre-med, went through all this training to become a physician. On the other hand, like, on the culinary side of things, like, do you ever find yourself, I don't know, like, wishing you had a little more formal training, or kind of finding that being able to do things, like, through experience is kind of enough?
You know, this is something I've definitely thought about a lot. Like, I always knew that by not having this, like, one-on-one, like, formal culinary school training, that there may be certain aspects I'm kind of a little bit lacking in. So, but, you know, I think when I've kind of tried to teach myself over the years, I tried to have a systematic approach where I was like, okay, is there an ingredient or technique that I'm not as familiar with? Like, and let's try to, you know, explore that or teach myself that. So despite not having to do that, I kind of have put that on myself. And for sure, there's still a lot to learn too. But I have found that in the culinary field, like, I mean, I think really any field, like, your strengths and your skill sets are based on the experiences you've had and, you know, who you've worked with. So I think in the kitchen, like, you always find that you're lacking in something, but someone else does it a certain way that's easier than what you've done. So I think as long as I keep an open mind and, you know, like, obviously, like, be humble, but also, you know, be confident in that I have tried to push myself and teach myself. And so there's things that I can bring to the table too. I think I'll continue to evolve and grow stronger.
Thank you so, so much for coming on the show. It has been so wonderful speaking with you.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor. And thank you for coming to the pop-up again. And stay tuned for more pop-ups.
Oh, of course. I can't wait to see what you do next.
When we come back, Karen and I will talk about the balancing act of food and medicine, art as a form of service, and living a life that makes you happy. All that after this.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Hey, listeners, whether you love true crime or comedies, celebrity interviews, news, or even motivational speakers, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue, right? And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance, too. Enter the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. The Name Your Price tool puts you in charge of your auto insurance by working just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance. Then they'll show you a variety of coverages that fit within your budget, giving you options. Now, that's something you'll want to press play on. It's easy to start a quote, and you'll be able to choose the best option for you fast. It's just one of the many ways you can save with Progressive Insurance. Quote today at progressive.com to try the Name Your Price tool for yourself and join over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, Karen, you and I are freelancers. You and I have a bunch of different jobs, including this podcast, but I cannot effing imagine being an urgent care doctor and a chef. Like, what?
I know. And as I mentioned, I went to a Hanshik pop-up that he developed the menu for. And when he presented the meal and talked about his story, I was just totally stunned. Like, both of these professions are so time-consuming and labor-intensive. It is so impressive to me that he's able to balance both.
Yeah, I mean, it is just rare. You know, we should just think about it for a moment. How rare it is that when someone is faced with the kind of creative crossroad that he described in his life, they choose both and instead of either or, even though, you know, both medicine and the restaurant industry, I mean, those are jobs that normally demand the totality of your being 24/7. So how did he make it work? And what can we learn from how he did it, do you think?
I think part of it has to do with what Yun said, where fortunately both of the places that he's working for are willing to afford him a little flexibility. And that sort of comes down to luck. Like, when I quit working full time at Slate, it was because I knew I needed to devote more time to my book if I ever wanted to finish it. And Slate wasn't willing at that point to offer me book leave. So I had to choose one or the other. It was, I didn't have that kind of flexibility. More generally speaking, I think it's creatively possible for Yun to do both these things because I think his mindset of wanting to cater to his community and his mindfulness about health and what goes into your body, like both of these things are things you consider in medicine and in food. So he has a healthy, I guess, or well-developed attitude like towards a crossover between the two fields.
It's interesting to think about how those practices are bound together by the idea of service. I always find personally to think of creativity and the creative act as a gift, as a form of service to a community, as a way of, you know, putting something out into the world that maybe makes it a tiny bit better. Do you think of your creative practice as a form of service? Is that a necessary prerequisite to making good art?
At the very least, I think it's difficult to create art in a vacuum, which I think I've said this before, but I don't think service should necessarily be the end goal. Like, you should be creating because the act of creation gives you joy and because you feel passionate about what kind of story you're telling. The difficulty is finding the balance between how much you want to consider your audience as opposed to solely what you want to do with your art. Sometimes the two things, what you like and what an audience will like, will align, but sometimes they won't. And sometimes you have to choose one over the other, especially if you're not in a position where ignoring your audience is possible, whether because you're not financially secure enough and depend on the income your art generates to live or for whatever other reason. So there are a lot of factors out there, but I think like ideally you have a sort of balance between the two things, what your audience will think and what you think of what you're making that makes you happy.
Yeah, it's really interesting thinking about, you know, all the various guests we've had on here and what the norms are in the various fields about how much you're supposed to think about your audience or not, or care about what they think or not, right? Like, it's like the food service folks we've had, it's like, actually the audience is what matters, you know? It's like, because you're making food, someone's going to eat it. What they, you know, they you're not making like a modernist masterpiece that's going to be controversial or whatever. And yeah, so I find the way we think about navigating all of those questions really, really fascinating. I also loved that question his mentor asked him about what made him happy. And one thing I loved about his story about that is that that question was a challenging one to him.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to kind of admit this sometimes, but I agree. It is fraught and scary to ask yourself, well, what actually makes me happy? Because then you might have to go out and change your life to try to do that thing. You know, is that a question you've asked yourself? Did you find it scary to do so? How do you navigate that?
Yeah, it is scary. And it's why I'm in LA right now, I would say. And it's a scary question to ask yourself, especially if you aren't already in the field that you ultimately want to pursue or think will make you happy, which is not, I think, an uncommon situation to be in. And it's easier to feel discouraged and find excuses not to pursue the thing that you think will make you happy because it is ultimately a risk. And it sort of comes down to something that we've discussed a lot on this show, which is whether or not you have this like financial safety net to be able to fall back on. Like, if you have a lot of wealth, then changing career paths or trying something new is not really as much of a risk to your livelihood or like life in general as it might be for someone who doesn't have that safety net and for whom quitting a secure job that doesn't necessarily make them happy would still have like a hugely detrimental effect on their life and mean that pursuing something else would be a gigantic gamble.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the risk factors and whatever vary from person to person, right? And there are certainly people who the place where they are in their life, they can't even really ask themselves that question, you know, because they don't have space to it. Like I had a friend who worked, and this is someone who had money, so it's not even about money, right? They worked a corporate job that was very remunerative, and they were like, you know, I think my time here is running out. Like I'm finding the work kind of drudgery. I don't really like my manager, you know, whatever it is, it's time to move on. But work took up so much of their consciousness, all the space in their life, that they couldn't actually figure out, well, what is the next thing I want to do? The only way they could figure that out actually was to quit their job, to give themselves the space, which you're not really supposed to do. You're usually supposed to leave a job for another job, right? And so it was a really tricky thing for them to kind of brace themselves to go do. It's complicated.
Yeah. It's just never easy to do, to risk whatever security you have. Mm.
You know, we've had a few guests, not in a row, but recently, that are in the culinary world in various places over the last few months. And I think we've usually been each other's co-hosts for those episodes. So I'm wondering, like, what have you learned about cooking as a creative practice from these guests?
I think the main thing I've learned is that I have to be cooking more, or I should try cooking more, because it usually makes me nervous that I'm going to mess up. Like, I'm a very instruction-oriented person. Like, I love being told what to do. Like, I love recipes that are like, use exactly like 3 tablespoons of this, or like one pinch of this. Like, I love doing that. But then, like, sometimes I get worried where, like, our oven isn't quite as hot as, like, the oven we had in our last apartment, so I need to adjust temperature for that, or, like, how much time I put it in there for, and, like, what is the best method of reheating X. I get worried a lot. I need to worry less and embrace more.
Well, I mean, what's the worst that could happen? You could poison yourself and your fiance, right? I mean, like, that's not that big a deal.
I mean, that seems pretty bad.
Yeah, you know what? Now that you mention it, it's pretty bad. Well, that's our show for this week. Thank you so much for listening. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And hey, if you haven't signed up for Slate Plus already, would you just go to slate.com/workingplus and do it? You get so much great stuff. Bonus segments on shows like this one. Full access behind the paywall. A weekly delightful newsletter. Our producer, Cameron Drews, will come to your house and throw you a surprise birthday party. Okay, that last one won't happen. But go to slate.com/workingplus and sign up for Slate Plus today.
Thank you so much to our guest, Yoon Sung. And as always, thank you to our scrumptious producer, Cameron Drews. We'll be back next week with Isaac's conversation with novelist V.V. Ganeshanathan. Until then, get back to work.